Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Corumdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking to our friend Eric Raymond.
Pastor Eric Raymond, welcome back to Omaha, Nebraska.
Thanks, Bob. Great to be here.
And we're filming in front of a live studio audience today.
Yeah, we've got a whole gallery of
folks joining us.
Get some like applause in the background.
Yeah, a little applause track.
Say anything profound.
So, Eric, you've been on this podcast before. You used to serve here in Omaha at Emmaus Bible Church. You are now in Boston.
Yeah.
How long you've been there. What's the adjustment been like? What feels most different to you from Omaha to Boston?
Yeah. So about a year and a half, just shy of a year and a half now. It's been good. I mean, the Lord's been very kind. When you sit back and think about the various ways that things could go wrong and the amount of things that do go wrong, you're just so grateful. I mean, the Lord's been very kind. And the church has been great. We feel welcome, we feel at home. My family has adjusted well. We moved into a home, and I just really feel like we're there, and we're there for the ministry. We feel confident that the Lord has called us there and called us to do work. So it's great encouragement with that. As far as adjustments go, I'm from the area, so it wasn't like it was a super change in terms of like just overall, like you're in a different culture. But for our family, I think they just haven't visited over the years. It wasn't something that was remarkably different for them either. So it was just like, you know, we're there. There's more people. It's very diverse. A lot of people are...
Everybody's a Patriots fan, which is terrible.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's maybe another conversation.
We'll get there.
Yeah. But, I mean, people use their horns on their cars, you know, they're driving around all the time. So it's, you know, it's stuff like that, which it's fun. It's kind of a buzz in the city, you know, which you appreciate and you enjoy. So that's good. But I mean, the opportunity for mission is just so exciting. And really for us, not that didn't exist here, but just, I think it was like 6 months in, there were like five examples of situations that I just, from pastoral reflex, I think, oh, this is going to be an issue. These people are going to leave the church. And like, nobody leaves the church. And I was like, why aren't these people leaving the church? I go talk to another pastor there. And I'm like, why did they? It seems like, and they were like, well, he's like, Eric, where will they go? So in one sense, like, there's nowhere to go around. And so I was like, I'm not trying to be like cute, but it's like in the other sense, like that really reminds you of the need to really work hard and to do ministry well and to plant churches. Because in Omaha, you're just thinking like, well, you know, it's not like there's enough churches here, but there's more than what you have. When you look at the numbers and you see that less than 2% of the areas go to an evangelical church. And I mean, you never bump into Christians. And so just seeing that and just that with kind of the background of the old buildings that are vacant and or condominiums, I mean, it's just a reminder that there's a great work that needs to be done.
Yeah, so I just looked on I was doing some research the other day on the Pew Forum. Mm-hmm. And the stats for Omaha are, at least for what people would self-profess, 25% evangelical.
Yeah.
Boston, 2%. Yeah, or New England, 2%.
Less than 2. And even, you know, those stats are sometimes off. But that's almost 25% is about average in the U.S.
Yeah.
For evangelical. Obviously not where we need to be.
Right.
But substantially more. Than you would find there. And it's not just in Boston. So it's the rural areas. Most of New England is rural.
Yeah.
And it would be the same there. In a place like, I think Rhode Island is the lowest percentage. Yeah.
So talk the surround. So when we talk Boston, right, I realize I've been there once. It was a really fun trip. You know, the city of Boston actually is a pretty defined geography. You're in Watertown, which is sort of out.
Yeah.
Past Cambridge, so you got MIT and Harvard, and then kind of Watertown. There's all these little. Yeah. I don't think they call them suburbs. They call them their own cities, right?
Towns or villages. That's what you would call them.
Okay.
So,
but it's all sort of, for lack of a better word, it's Boston in the broad sense. But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not the sort of heart of Boston. Is that right?
Right. So Boston founded 1630. Watertown and Boston both 1630. Those are the first towns. the Charles River goes through Boston, empties into the Boston Harbor, and kind of divides things up. So you have, yeah, Cambridge is just north of Boston, connects, then Watertown's the next town over. But Boston, the way it spreads and has spread over the years, so we share a border with Boston. So on the other side of the river is Boston. So you're right there on that side. But then it expands to the south as well. So it just, it is kind of a larger area. But it all, the whole area, you would just say Boston. And, you know, then if you're speaking to somebody and be more particular and you talk about the part of Boston, you might be in West Roxbury or you might be Hyde Park or something like that. And you're speaking about those defined areas. Yeah.
Talk about the cultural dynamic of, so I think of the Midwestern and feel like, man, if somebody honks at me, that's kind of mean. Well, how did, but the Northeast just has a different way of thinking about that. It's like, they're not, it's not mean. It's just people are very straightforward. There's not like a Midwestern, like deferential,
right?
You know, how do you explain that?
I think
cultural factor.
I mean, I think you just appreciate that everybody's in a hurry and you need to do your job, like Belichick would say. And, so if you're sitting there at the red light, and you're not going, it's going to turn green and you're sitting there checking your phone or whatever, someone's going to honk and you're going to appreciate it and you're going to go. I mean, so honking is just communication. And so you just kind of go and then everybody honks. Like five cars back will honk you. You know, it's good. And so that's, or pedestrians, like just walk. People get hit by cars all the time. It's alarming, you know. It's like, what are we doing? You just use the crosswalk, but no. So it's just kind of assertive.
Yeah, it's an assertive culture.
You got to do that, yeah.
So a number of questions come through my mind. The first one, so one of the things that, as far as your ministry in Omaha, that I just greatly loved and benefited from is your preaching. And so I'm curious how, in many ways, preaching the gospel is the same no matter where you go, but in what ways have you had to adjust, maybe contextualize or shift for preaching in the Boston area compared to Omaha?
That's a great question, Chris. So I've tried to give this a lot of thought over the last year and going up there and thinking about it. At least one example is the church is very diverse ethnically. So we have about 30 different nations. We have 83 members and about 30 different nations made up in that. So that's a massive diversity. And not only a lot of them are first generation Christians, but many of them are first generation living in America. So English is not the first language. Mm-hmm. So I was meeting with a brother from Albania, and I'm talking to him, and you know, you can tell his English is not really, really solid. And I just said, are you able to follow what I'm preaching? He's like, sometimes. And I said, you know, what would be helpful? And then he said, slow down. Slow down. So there's that. So I've provided him on occasion a manuscript beforehand that I may or may not use, but at least he can read through that and get the flow. So he and his wife will read that. And then I've had similar feedback from Greek speakers, Spanish speakers. We have people that interpret so live, so they're speaking, saying what I'm saying in their earbuds. So I have to be mindful of different word pictures and idioms and different cultural things that I might say. From one thing that I was just kind of straining through my preaching and thinking about how I communicate, illustrations by default in Omaha many times involve the family. We have many single people in the church, so you exclude, say, 30% of the church immediately with that, or by talking about saying as an American, which immediately excludes people, and even people coming in from outside. I'd like to maybe talk a little bit more about this, but just the complementarian thinking is not assumed. So you have to be very careful on how you phrase things up and deal with kind of apologetic sidebars that would have been assumed, I think, here, that I maybe wrongly assumed, but I think were definitely assumed. And so it's just, I'm trying to be more careful. And I think I'm pulling that out of trying to love our people, communicate clearly, but at the same time, know there's a context to everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like you certainly have a heart for New England. You want to see the gospel flourish there. And it seems like you have a passion for Christians in America to care about that work. So talk about why you feel like that's important.
Yeah. So I just think as a Christian, we have to think in terms of stewardship. Like that's foundational to how we think. So everything we have is a gift. Nothing is ours. God is the one who gives all gifts, as James 1 says. And so it's incumbent on the one who's received the gift, the steward, to to be a good steward and to improve upon the gifts that God has given, knowing that we're going to give an account for even the gifts that we have. So that, that has massive implications from everything to how we balance our checkbook, to how we use our time, to how we organize and prioritize ministry. And so for me, when I look at the statistics, like you were mentioning earlier about New England, and I look at that, and I mean, it hits me harder being from there than it would than the stats in, say, Scotland or even the Pacific Northwest. And one of the reasons that it hits me particularly is that New England was reached at one point, right? So when you drive around Harvard and you look at the signs and the engravings, and I mean, they dig up the dirt over there and find stuff that John Eliot transcribed into the Algonquin language, the Bible, like. In Harvard right now, it's there. People are finding this stuff. It was so reached and such a booming evangelical place, and now it's not, right? And you see the statistics. I said it's unacceptable. I mean, to see what happened. I mean, I was just reading in Thomas Kidd's new book on evangelicalism that New Englanders would send missionaries to the South to rescue it after the Civil War, and now all the missionaries have to come up from the South, right? So I'm looking at that. I'm just saying from a stewardship standpoint, like, it's not okay. Like, we shouldn't say, well, you know, pound our chest. Here we are up in New England doing this work. And, like, nobody's a Christian. Look at us. It should be like, this is unacceptable, right? I mean, because I think of Paul walking around Athens and his spirit was greatly provoked because the city was full of idols. He wasn't like, wow, what awesome architecture. This is amazing. What great food. It's like, this is horrible. This is unacceptable. God is a God that deserves worship. He's jealous for his glory. His people should be jealous for his glory. So from a stewardship standpoint, it's like, this is in our backyard. This isn't Europe. As different as New England is, it's America. And we have a responsibility, I think, to try to think intentionally about how to reach the people there in a strategic way. And that may be going there. It may be through prayer. It may be through financial support. There's a lot of ways to do that. But I think from a stewardship standpoint, I think everybody in America that thinks about unreached people groups in places around the world and in places that need people to go, I just want them to include New England in that conversation because it desperately needs it.
What are the things that you see the Lord doing as far as how are you seeking to build network? I mean, strategically?
Yeah,
you know, as we think about reaching that part, what's happening there that we should be aware of?
So I'm not going in there cold with things not happening, right? So some people you know have been there for years. So the SBC has been there and prioritized it as a send city. Been pumping money and resources into the greater Boston area. Acts 29 has prioritized it. Converge has prioritized it. So there's this healthy, faithful ministries happening there. So for me going in there, I just want to basically like jump in the canoe, grab an oar and go. And one of the things that I noticed initially in coming in is that a lot of guys are working hard, grinding it out and going. It's almost like a type of situation where it's really hard, exhausting, and you kind of have the oxygen mask comes down. And it's like, put it on yourself first and then your kids, right? It's like, like people aren't thinking primarily about like, let's build networks to think strategically for the next 3 or 4 decades. If they are, they're few and far between. So I think going in and just trying to like gather some guys together, gather some like-minded churches together and think about how we can pray and think and act strategically to try to litter the landscape with gospel preaching churches while bringing some encouragement to these brothers that are working hard. So we do that through monthly prayer meetings that we have with local guys in Boston that get together to pray. About 15 pastors come together. We pray and eat and talk. And then also we're part of the NETS organization, New England Training and Sending, which is a group up in Vermont that planted Redeemer Fellowship and still maintains a close relationship with RFC. They've planted 7 churches in New England since 2000, revitalized 7 more, and planted churches in Africa. But what I love about NETS is the investment in the pastors and the local church where the SBC has struggled with about a 95% fail rate in Boston. NETS has 100% success rate. And that's not because they have this magic formula. They've used God's means for God's ends, and God's blessed it. And so, I mean, really partnering with guys like that to try to train people and deploy people and send them out to plant and revitalize.
How did NETS come to be and who's behind it?
So Wes Pastor is the guy that really started NETS. graduated Westminster Seminary and then went up to Vermont because he wanted to go to a mission field, and it was in the 90s. And that was, you know, secular at that time as well. And planted a church, parachuted in, church grew, began training people for ministry. The first church, first intern that they trained, they sent him to Dartmouth College in New York and New Hampshire. And that guy's church has been going since early 2000. Then you got Hartford, and Redeemer Fellowship is in Boston. And then they just began multiplying those over the last 15 to 20 years of just training people for a one-year residency, then one-year internship, two-year residency, and then sending them out. So, for example, like the last year, these guys graduated the program just before the summertime. There are already two churches that need to be revitalized. And then now there's one of these brothers is in Maine and the other one is in Medfield, so just south of us. So there's so many open pulpits. We just need guys that can get trained and kind of put them circling the runway. And when it's time, you just like go and then give them money and give them people and give them an encouraging network. And that's, I think, long-term, that's how you do it.
So do you see a growing interest in guys wanting to plant or to be part of that revitalization in New England? Or are you like begging guys or really trying to recruit guys, I should say?
Yeah, I'd say yes to both questions.
Okay.
Yeah, I think as New England is a place which people, I think it's kind of that entrepreneurial, hungry commando, gospel commandos, like, let's go, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. At the same time, there's guys that come up and, you know, after a year or two or 5 years, like, this isn't for me. So they would end up going back. But there are people coming up and working hard and getting mm-hmm. after this. There's a lot of interest.
Yeah.
What are the key, what you would call, what Keller calls gospel defeaters, right? What are the things culturally or in people's worldview that just sort of make the gospel a non-starter that you find yourself having to overcome, either apologetically or evangelistically?
Yeah, I think people are open to talking, it's very, very pluralistic in the sense it's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, you're giving me some strange things. Like, I've never heard of that. Like, it is truly strange. I think just the concept of being created for God and God actually deserving worship, I think that's a framework for people they don't have. They understand worship in one sense because education is a God, money is a God, but it's not in any sense where that needs to you know, that needs to be a part of their life. I mean, so education and success and the idol of comfort are rampant. There. I mean, people, average person is driving hours in commute, back and forth, dealing with traffic, doing all this just to work, to make money, and then spending all this time and educate really good things and doing amazing things with their jobs, but just completely doing it in a way that has obscured God completely. So, yeah.
Would you call what you're doing revitalization? I mean, you inherited a church, you inherited some people, you know, they don't know you, you don't know them as well. So there's sort of that season of time of like, what does it mean for us to be on mission together? How would you describe what that's been like?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it in a revitalization category. I would say though that we're like almost like the cry of the Reformation, always reforming. So, you know, you're doing some things to try to tighten things up for the sake of the mission. So there's some of that going on, no doubt. But, you know, healthy church, godly elders, priority on the preaching of the word, a real burden for ministry and mission. People love one another. I mean, so that's there, and it's great. It's a lot to work with. Building's beautiful. The opportunity in the community is great. So I wouldn't call it revitalization. I would say it's just kind of grabbing a hold of something that was going, and let's try to push it. Let's kick it up a gear, and let's be intentional with our time.
And you have a building, which is a big deal in Boston.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great— buildings are expensive.
Yeah, so you can't— there's no land to buy.
Right.
And so, then you can't buy buildings because they're very difficult to obtain. So— that's why revitalization is strategic. So we have three guys that I know that are in addition to those two that I mentioned, in revitalization situations where they go into a completely liberal church and they're like, look, this is who I am. They're straight up. And they're like, that's fine. Just come here and preach the Bible. Do what we need you to do. And then they end up turning them over time, you know, by God's grace. So revitalization is a strategy. I think it's an effective way to go in a cost-effective way. But yeah, we're right on Mount Auburn Street in Watertown, so just right up from the square, you know, right from the river and major thoroughfare. People, very much pedestrian area. So people are walking by, taking pictures of the building and looking at it and coming in and asking questions. Yeah, it's a people come in from the street, hear the gospel, get converted, join the church. Hmm. I mean, we just baptized someone this past summer, and that was the testimony.
Hmm. What's the backstory on the building?
Yeah, so... Real quick, I'm going to go way back, but I'm going to do it fast.
Great, I like it.
Okay.
Hey, we don't have a way back. We live in Omaha. Like, yeah. The whole history of our city is probably shorter than the history of your building.
1630, right? So Winthrop, the first governor of Massachusetts, comes over and basically tells his pastor, because it was basically a church came over from Europe. It wasn't, this is like a bunch of people jumping in a boat. Like, we're going there. And so they come over in 1630, and he tells them, basically, go down the river and find a place to put the building. And like, find a church. And so he comes and he lands in Watertown and he's like, this is where it's going to be. So they start right there and they do First Church of Watertown. Well, that's 1630. Things are going really well. Reverend Phillips is the pastor there. And eventually he dies. And as what happens in about the mid-1800s is the Unitarian issue happens. And Harvard University goes south and all the churches go down. So it becomes a Unitarian church. So a bunch of the people that were faithful from that church left and they founded Phillips, named after the original guy, Congregational Church in the mid-1800s. So they left the Unitarian and Unitarian planted this church, which is the building that we ended up purchasing. It was this old Phillips Congregational Church. Had multiple fires, things had to be rebuilt, but we're on this plot of land, kind of with a lineage back to 1630 from people that were seeking religious freedom and the ability to worship God and faithfully evangelize the community. So
that's cool.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. when you look at that. And we're able to get the building at a fair price, so to speak, and then been able to do a lot of renovations on it. So it's beautiful. You need to come visit.
I'd love to.
All right.
Let's do it. Okay, so Red Sox, Celtics, Patriots. What's the order of priority? For people in general.
Yeah, I actually just saw a stat recently on this. I quizzed my kids to see how well they've adjusted and what they figured out. So this is the order. According to recent, I think this changed probably about 10 or 15 years ago, but Patriots number one.
Well, sure, because they win the Super Bowl every other year.
Yeah, but Tom Brady's got something. Brady and Belichick have something going on that's unique.
Yeah.
I mean, just in terms of the way they connect with people.
Some would say a pact with Satan.
But the way they connect with people, because Belichick's a very connecting kind of person.
He's great. Have you talked to people from New England? I mean,
he's basically them.
That is perfect.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
That's great. Very direct. So you have the Patriots, and then number two would be the Red Sox, and number three would be the Bruins, and then the Celtics.
Celtics are at the bottom of the list, huh?
Yeah, they got public relations issues. I mean, Kyrie Irving didn't help that, and just it's not been good.
Yeah. I didn't even. The Bruins weren't even on my list.
Bruins have a massive
sport I don't
following.
Care about.
They have the Bruins. They're very the bunch of grinders. They get a couple of guys from Massachusetts on the team, and just they play hard. I mean, the playoffs last year, they went to the Stanley Cup, and it was people were very excited about the Bruins.
All right,
college football not as much.
Not so much.
Yeah,
Boston College
not as much.
Not so much.
Not very good.
Harvard not good in football.
Really not good. Well, you were asking me earlier about some differences. Something I neglected to mention was I was kind of surprised by this, and I shouldn't have been, but I always think in terms of when you think about complementarianism, I'm thinking like I'm dealing with complementarianism and I'm dealing with egalitarianism, and I can kind of work through those two categories and help explain the differences and why I think this is by complementarianism is biblical and egalitarianism. This is why I don't think this is biblical, but try to present the argument in a way that they would agree and say this is true. But there's a whole nother category that I'm trying to figure out, which I've seen in just conversations and just listening to people. I would say it's post-egalitarianism, which is to see it's not that men and women are equal, but it's actually that men are less and that women are better. And then it's some of the intersectional stuff where it kind of goes into that type of thinking. And that's like a whole new category for beginning to help people to think through this biblical paradigm of creation and what the way the church functions. So you're not just coming in and seeing male leadership preaching and pastoral ministry, but actually looking and saying like, why are they even there? Hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just egalitarianism, it's even a step further. And I think that's something I'm trying to get my mind around, how to like winsomely engage that conversation and help people to see human dignity. And worth is the same, but then there's distinction in roles, because that whole thing, that is an omelet that's difficult to unscramble.
Wow. You know? Wow.
What do you think for those of us who live here and love you and care about the Lord's work in New England, what are the most significant ways we can be helping, praying, caring, mm-hmm. you know, how do we sort of further the work the Lord's doing there from afar?
Yeah, I mean, obviously prayer, right? That's something anybody can do and can engage in. And just, you know, if you write a note, think about it, write it down, pray for us, pray for our church, pray for New England in general. Just that the God would bless the preaching of the word, as Paul says to the Thessalonians, that the word of God would speed ahead. You know, we want to see that happen. You can pray for that anytime. If you know people that I'm thinking specifically of men, because I'm thinking of pastoral ministry, but men and women. If you're thinking about men for pastoral ministry, guys that are humble guys, that are word guys, that maybe have thick skin, that want to go into missions, to encourage another category to think about, which would be the category of domestic missions in New England. And so thinking about that, and then I would just say, send them my way. I want to talk to them. Hand out my number. I'll answer the phone. Email me. I'd love to talk to them about that. Then the other category would be maybe strategically that somebody has a job where they can do it in really anywhere, right? So if somebody, especially up in the Boston area, you can pretty much do anything up there. So it maybe would be the type of deal where you say, well, I work here, but I would like to be involved in missions and I could go work there. You could, if you're a mature Christian, that's a healthy church member, you could come in, be part of our church, work there and be a major blessing. So moving up to that area, maybe not in full-time ministry as a church planner or revitalizer, but that category of saying, hey, we could do missions and still live here. I think that's another way. And the other would obviously would financial support. NETS is an organization that works through the financial support of donors. So if people want to go out to the website for, I think it's nets.org, the NETS organization, look at that and then talk to them about support or come visit us. There's a vision tour to come up, visit the churches, come see us. Go to Red Sox game or something. Talk about it. I would love to do that.
Have a lobster roll.
There's fish. I'm not a big lobster
You're
guy.
Not a lobster roll. Okay.
But fish, clams. Yeah, we can do that. Okay. We can get some steamers and it would be good.
Okay, let's do it. I'm in. Well, thanks for coming back and spending some time with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from our listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.